The sit-in by House Democrats is slowly ending this morning on Capitol Hill after Republican leadership pushed through adjournment of the House until next month. Democrats want to vote on gun legislation following the mass shooting at a gay nightclub in Orlando. The Senate this week voted down new gun regulations. Proponents of stricter gun laws want individual states to take action. But, as WBUR's Anthony Brooks reports, there's not much research to back up arguments on either side of the gun control debate.
We hear again and again that Massachusetts has some of the toughest gun laws in the nation. They include restrictive licensing agreements, safe gun storage rules, a ban on semi-automatic assault-style weapons and large-capacity magazines, and rules that allow local police chiefs to deny gun permits. But do they work? In a piece we reported last week, we heard John Rosenthal, founder of Stop Handgun Violence, say that Massachusetts makes it very difficult for criminals to get their hands on guns.
And that's why we've been able to reduce gun deaths in the state by 60% since 1994.
But we also heard from Jim Wallace, president of the Gun Owners Action League of Massachusetts, the local NRA affiliate, who said this.
Since the 1998 gun laws were put in place in Massachusetts, gun crime actually tripled, while the rest of the nation's gun crime was declining.
So what's going on here? As we reported last week, Rosenthal and Wallace are looking at different time periods and measuring different things. For example, Rosenthal looks at all forms of gun violence, while Wallace omits suicides, which account for the majority of the country's gun deaths. But what do we really know about guns and about how well gun laws work?
There are so many things we don't know whenever you scratch the surface.
This is David Hemenway, a professor at the Harvard School of Public Health and director of Harvard's Injury Control Research Center. He says among the reasons we know so little is that Congress, abetted by the NRA, prohibits the Centers for Disease Control and the National Institutes of Health from using federal funds to advocate or promote gun control. Speaking recently on the public radio show Science Friday, Hemenway says this has a chilling effect on the study of guns.
CDC has been afraid to do gun research and has been really afraid to even say the word guns. If there's any research and it looks bad for, it indicates that maybe having a gun in the home is not such a good thing, then often CDC gets brought in front of Congress and gets beaten up.
The result has been a dramatic mismatch in the allocation of research dollars. For example, in the United States from 1973 to 2012, there were about 2,000 cases of cholera, diphtheria, polio, and rabies combined. Compare that to more than 4 million gun injuries during the same period. But during those years, the NIH funded almost 500 studies on those infectious diseases, and the number of studies on gun safety? 3. So Hemenway says there's a lot he'd like to understand about guns.
I mean, one of the many things I would like to know is who is using these guns inappropriately and how did they get these guns? We really don't know. We know so little about gun theft, about gun storage, about gun training, about concealed gun carrying. You name it, we hardly know anything.
But that could change. Just this week, following the massacre in Orlando, Florida, the American Medical Association called gun violence in the U.S. a public health crisis and says it will begin lobbying Congress to overturn legislation that blocks federally funded gun research. In the meantime, we do know a few things about gun laws. For example, here's a finding from Eric Fliegler, a pediatric emergency physician at Boston Children's Hospital and an assistant professor at Harvard Medical School.
What we can very clearly state is that if you live in states that have higher numbers of laws, the likelihood of dying from a gun is significantly lower.
Back in 2013, Fliegler authored a study that was published in a journal of the American Medical Association, which looked at the relationship between gun laws and gun deaths. He found that between 2007 and 2010, states with the most gun laws, like Massachusetts, had 42% fewer gun deaths than states with the fewest gun laws, like Louisiana. Fliegler says the study showed a dramatic correlation between the number of people who own guns and the number of gun deaths.
In states that have more laws, what you see is that the firearm ownership rates go down. So in other words, less houses own firearms. And as the firearm ownership rates go down, you see a very dramatic drop in fatality rates.
He found dramatic drops in both homicides and suicides. But Fliegler's study only goes so far. It shows that more gun laws are generally associated with fewer gun deaths, but there's no proof that the laws are responsible. In other words, correlation does not imply causation. For example, it could be that states with low rates of gun ownership are more willing to enact gun laws, and the study can't say which gun laws work and which don't. But David Hemenway of Harvard says the idea that fewer guns in the home lead to fewer deaths has been borne out by several studies.
One of the few areas where we have incredibly good, solid research is the fact that a gun in the home really increases the risk of suicide, and it increases it dramatically, maybe threefold, for everyone in the household. And that's one of the things we really, really know well.
Another thing we know is that without federal action on guns, it's left up to individual states to enact gun laws or not. This creates a patchwork in which a state like Massachusetts has relatively restrictive laws that are compromised by nearby states with less restrictive laws, like Maine and New Hampshire. And where a state like Florida permits Omar Mateen, who'd been on a terrorist watch list, to buy a military-style rifle with a high-capacity magazine. This week, once again, Congress left that porous patchwork of laws in place. For 90.9 WBUR, I'm Anthony Brooks.